a slip of parchment and drop it into the goblet," said Dumbledore. "Aspiring champions have 24 hours in which to put their names forward. Tomorrow night, Halloween, the goblet will return the names of the three it has judged most worthy to represent their schools. The goblet will be placed in the entrance hall tonight, where it will be freely accessible to all those wishing to compete. To ensure that no underage student yields to temptation," said Dumbledore, "I will be drawing an age line around the goblet of fire once it has been placed in the entrance hall. Nobody under the age of 17 will be able to cross this line. Finally, I wish to impress upon any of you wishing to compete that this tournament is not to be entered into lightly. Once a champion has been selected by the goblet of fire, he or she is obliged to see the tournament through to the end. The placing of your name in the goblet constitutes a binding magical contract. There can be no change of heart once you have become a champion. Please be very sure, therefore, that you are wholeheartedly prepared to play before you drop your name into the goblet. Now, I think it's time for bed. Good night to you all."
"An age line?" Fred Weasley said, his eyes glinting as they all made their way across the hall to the doors into the entrance hall. "Well, that should be fooled by an aging potion, shouldn't it? And once your name's in that goblet, you're laughing. It can't tell whether you're 17 or not."
"But I don't think anyone under 17 will stand a chance," said Hermione. "We just haven't learnt enough."
"Speak for yourself," said George shortly.
"You'll try and get in, won't you, Harry?"
Harry thought briefly of Dumbledore's insistence that nobody under 17 should submit their name. But then the wonderful picture of himself winning the Tri-Wizard Tournament filled his mind again. He wondered how angry Dumbledore would be if someone younger than 17 did find a way to get over the age line.
"Where is he?" said Ron,
who wasn't listening to a word of this conversation, but looking through the crowd to see what had become of Crumb.
"Dumbledore didn't say where the Durmstrang people are sleeping, did he?"
But this query was answered almost instantly. They were level with the Slytherin table now, and Karkaroff had just bustled up to his students.
"Back to the ship, then," he was saying. "Victor, how are you feeling? Did you eat enough? Should I send for some mulled wine from the kitchens?"
Harry saw Crumb shake his head as he pulled his furs back on.
"Professor, I would like some wine," said one of the other Durmstrang boys hopefully.
"I wasn't offering it to you, Polyakov," snapped Karkaroff,
his warmly paternal air vanishing in an instant.
"I notice you have dribbled food all down the front of your robes again. Disgusting boy!"
Karkaroff turned and led his students toward the doors, reaching them at exactly the same moment as Harry, Ron, and Hermione. Harry stopped to let him walk through first.
"Thank you,"
said Karkaroff carelessly, glancing at him. And then Karkaroff froze. He turned his head back to Harry and stared at him as though he couldn't believe his eyes. Behind their headmaster, the students from Durmstrang came to a halt too. Karkaroff's eyes moved slowly up Harry's face and fixed upon his scar. The Durmstrang students were staring curiously at Harry, too. Out of the corner of his eye, Harry saw comprehension dawn on a few of their faces. The boy with food all down his front nudged the girl next to him and pointed openly at Harry's forehead.
"Yeah, that's Harry Potter,"
said a growling voice from behind them. Professor Karkaroff spun around. Mad-Eye Moody was standing there, leaning heavily on his staff, his magical eye glaring unblinkingly at the Durmstrang headmaster. The colour drained from Karkaroff's face as Harry watched. A terrible look of mingled fury and fear came over him.
"You!"
he said, staring at Moody as though unsure he was really seeing him.
"Me!" said Moody grimly. "And unless you've got anything to say to Potter, Karkaroff, you might want to move.
You're blocking the doorway." It was true. Half the students in the hall were now waiting behind them, looking over one another's shoulders to see what was causing the hold-up. Without another word, Professor Karkaroff swept his students away with him. Moody watched him until he was out of sight, his magical eye fixed upon his back, a look of intense dislike upon his mutilated face. As the next day was Saturday, most students would normally have breakfasted late. Harry, Ron, and Hermione, however, were not alone in rising much earlier than they usually did on weekends. When they went down into the entrance hall, they saw about 20 people milling around it, some of them eating toast, all examining the goblet of fire. It had been placed in the center of the hall, on the stool that normally bore the sorting hat. A thin, golden line had been traced on the floor, forming a circle 10 feet around it in every direction.
"Anyone put their name in yet?"
Ron asked a third-year girl eagerly.
"All the Durmstrang lot," she replied. "But I haven't seen anyone from Hogwarts yet."
"Bet some of them put it in last night after we'd all gone to bed," said Harry. "I would have, if it had been me. Wouldn't have wanted everyone watching.
What if the goblet just gobbed you right back out again?"
Someone laughed behind Harry. Turning, he saw Fred, George, and Lee Jordan hurrying down the staircase, all three of them looking extremely excited.
"Done it!"
Fred said in a triumphant whisper to Harry, Ron, and Hermione.
"Just taken it!"
"What?" said Ron.
"The aging potion, dung brains," said Fred.
"One drop each," said George, rubbing his hands together with glee.
"We only need to be a few months older.
We're going to split the 1,000 galleons between the three of us if one of us wins," said Lee, grinning broadly.
"I'm not sure this is going to work, you know," said Hermione warningly. "I'm sure Dumbledore will have thought of this."
Fred, George, and Lee ignored her.
"Ready?" Fred said to the other two, quivering with excitement. "Come on, then. I'll go first."
Harry watched, fascinated, as Fred pulled a slip of parchment out of his pocket bearing the words, "Fred Weasley, Hogwarts." Fred walked right up to the edge of the line and stood there, rocking on his toes like a diver preparing for a 50-foot drop. Then, with the eyes of every person in the entrance hall upon him, he took a great breath and stepped over the line. For a split second, Harry thought it had worked. George certainly thought so, for he let out a yell of triumph and leapt after Fred. But next moment there was a loud sizzling sound, and both twins were hurled out of the golden circle as though they had been thrown by an invisible shot-putter. They landed painfully 10 feet away on the cold stone floor, and, to add insult to injury, there was a loud popping noise, and both of them sprouted identical long white beards. The entrance hall rang with laughter. Even Fred and George joined in, once they had gotten to their feet and taken a good look at each other's beards.
"I did warn you," said a deep, amused voice,
and everyone turned to see Professor Dumbledore coming out of the great hall. He surveyed Fred and George, his eyes twinkling.
"I suggest you both go up to Madame Pomfrey. She is already tending to Miss Fawcett of Ravenclaw and Mr. Summers of Hufflepuff, both of whom decided to age themselves up a little too, though I must say neither of their beards is anything like as fine as yours."
Fred and George set off for the hospital wing, accompanied by Lee, who was howling with laughter, and Harry, Ron, and Hermione, also chortling, went in to breakfast. The decorations in the great hall had changed this morning. As it was Halloween, a cloud of live bats was fluttering around the enchanted ceiling, while hundreds of carved pumpkins leered from every corner. Harry led the way over to Dean and Seamus, who were discussing those Hogwarts students of 17 or over who might be entering.
"There's a rumour going round that Warrington got up early and put his name in," Dean told Harry. "That big bloke from Slytherin, who looks like a sloth."
Harry, who had played Quidditch against Warrington, shook his head in disgust.
"We can't have a Slytherin champion." "And all the Hufflepuffs are talking about Diggory," said Seamus contemptuously. "But I wouldn't have thought he'd have wanted to risk his good looks."
"Listen,"
said Hermione suddenly. People were cheering out in the entrance hall. They all swiveled around in their seats and saw Angelina Johnson coming into the hall, grinning in an embarrassed sort of way. A tall, black girl who played chaser on the Gryffindor Quidditch team. Angelina came over to them, sat down and said,
"Well, I've done it! Just put my name in!"
"You're kidding," said Ron, looking impressed.
"Are you 17, then?" asked Harry.
"Course she is. Can't see a beard, can you?" said Ron.
"I had my birthday last week," said Angelina.
"Well, I'm glad someone from Gryffindor's entering," said Hermione. "I really hope you get it, Angelina."
"Thanks, Hermione," said Angelina, smiling at her.
"Yeah, better you than pretty boy Diggory,"
said Seamus, causing several Hufflepuffs passing their table to scowl heavily at him.
"What are we going to do today, then?"
Ron asked Harry and Hermione when they had finished breakfast and were leaving the Great Hall.
"We haven't been down to visit Hagrid yet," said Harry.
"Okay,"
said Ron, "just as long as he doesn't ask us to donate a few fingers to the Scroots." A look of great excitement suddenly dawned on Hermione's face.
"I've just realized I haven't asked Hagrid to join SPEW yet," she said brightly. "Wait for me, will you, while I nip upstairs and get the badges?"
"What is it with her?"
said Ron, exasperated, as Hermione ran away up the marble staircase.
"Hey, Ron," said Harry suddenly. "It's your friend."
The students from Beauxbatons were coming through the front doors from the grounds, among them the Vila girl. Those gathered around the Goblet of Fire stood back to let them pass, watching eagerly. Madame Maxime entered the hall behind her students and organized them into a line. One by one, the Beauxbatons students stepped across the age line and dropped their slips of parchment into the blue-white flames. As each name entered the fire, it turned briefly red and emitted sparks.
"What do you reckon will happen to the ones who aren't chosen?"
Ron muttered to Harry as the Vila girl dropped her parchment into the Goblet of Fire.
"Reckon they'll go back to school? Or hang around to watch the tournament?"
"Dunno," said Harry.
"Hang around, I suppose. Madame Maxime's staying to judge, isn't she?"
When all the Beauxbatons students had submitted their names, Madame Maxime led them back out of the hall and out onto the grounds again.
"Where are they sleeping, then?"
said Ron, moving toward the front doors and staring after them. A loud rattling noise behind them announced Hermione's reappearance with a box of SPEW badges.
"Oh, good, hurry up,"
said Ron, and he jumped down the stone steps, keeping his eyes on the back of the Vila girl, who was now halfway across the lawn with Madame Maxime. As they neared Hagrid's cabin on the edge of the Forbidden Forest, the mystery of the Beauxbatons' sleeping quarters was solved. The gigantic powder-blue carriage in which they had arrived had been parked 200 yards from Hagrid's front door, and the students were climbing back inside it. The elephantine flying horses that had pulled the carriage were now grazing in a makeshift paddock alongside it. Harry knocked on Hagrid's door, and Fang's booming barks answered instantly.
"'Bout time!" said Hagrid, when he'd flung open the door. "Thought you lot had forgotten where I live."
"We've been really busy, Hag—"
Hermione started to say, but then she stopped dead, looking up at Hagrid, apparently lost for words. Hagrid was wearing his best and very horrible hairy brown suit, plus a checked yellow and orange tie. This wasn't the worst of it, though. He had evidently tried to tame his hair, using large quantities of what appeared to be axle grease. It was now slicked down into two bunches. Perhaps he had tried a ponytail like Bill's, but found he had too much hair. The look didn't really suit Hagrid at all. For a moment, Hermione goggled at him, then, obviously deciding not to comment, she said,
"Where are the Scroots?"
"Out by the pumpkin patch," said Hagrid happily. "They're getting massive. Must be nearly 3 foot long now. Only trouble is, they've started killing each other."
"Oh, no, really?"
said Hermione, shooting a repressive look at Ron, who, staring at Hagrid's odd hairstyle, had just opened his mouth to say something about it.
"Yeah," said Hagrid sadly. "'S-okay, though. I've got them in separate boxes now. Still got about 20.
"Well, that's lucky," said Ron.
Hagrid missed the sarcasm. Hagrid's cabin comprised a single room, in one corner of which was a gigantic bed covered in a patchwork quilt. A similarly enormous wooden table and chairs stood in front of the fire beneath the quantity of cured hams and dead birds hanging from the ceiling. They sat down at the table while Hagrid started to make tea, and were soon immersed in yet more discussion of the Tri-Wizard Tournament. Hagrid seemed quite as excited about it as they were.
"You wait," he said, grinning. "You just wait. You're going to see some stuff you've never seen before. First task..." "Ah, but I'm not supposed to say."
"Go on, Hagrid," Harry, Ron, and Hermione urged him. But he just shook his head, grinning.
"I don't want to spoil it for you," said Hagrid. "But it's going to be spectacular, I'll tell you that. Them champions are going to have their work cut out. Never thought I'd live to see the Tri-Wizard Tournament played again."
They ended up having lunch with Hagrid, though they didn't eat much. Hagrid had made what he said was a beef casserole, but after Hermione unearthed the large talon in hers, she, Harry, and Ron rather lost their appetites. However, they enjoyed themselves trying to make Hagrid tell them what the tasks in the tournament were going to be, speculating which of the entrants were likely to be selected as champions, and wondering whether Fred and George were beardless yet. A light rain had started to fall by mid-afternoon. It was very cozy sitting by the fire, listening to the gentle patter of the drops on the window, watching Hagrid darning his socks and arguing with Hermione about house elves, for he flatly refused to join SPEW when she showed him her badges.
"It'd be doing him an unkindness, Hermione,"
he said gravely, threading a massive bone needle with thick yellow yarn.
"It's in their nature to look after humans. That's what they like, see? You'd be making them unhappy to take away their work and insulting them if you tried to pay them."
"But Harry set Dobby free, and he was over the moon about it," said Hermione. "And we heard he's asking for wages now."
"Yeah, well, you get weirdos in every breed. I'm not saying there isn't the odd elf who'd take freedom, but you'll never persuade most of them to do it. No, nothing doing, Hermione."
Hermione looked very cross indeed, and stuffed her box of badges back into her cloak pocket. By 5:30 it was growing dark, and Ron, Harry, and Hermione decided it was time to get back up to the castle for the Halloween feast, and, more important, the announcement of the school champions.
"I'll come with you," said Hagrid, putting away his darning. "Just give us a sec."
Hagrid got up, went across to the chest of drawers beside his bed, and began searching for something inside it. They didn't pay too much attention until a truly horrible smell reached their nostrils. Coughing, Ron said,
"Hagrid, what's that?"
"Eh?"
said Hagrid, turning around with a large bottle in his hand.
"Don't you like it?"
"Is that aftershave?"
said Hermione in a slightly choked voice.
Older cologne,"
Hagrid muttered. He was blushing.
"Maybe it's a bit much,"
he said gruffly.
"I'll go take it off. Hang on."
He stumped out of the cabin, and they saw him washing himself vigorously in the water barrel outside the window.
"Eau de Cologne?" said Hermione in amazement. "Hagrid?"
"And what's with the hair and the suit?" said Harry in an undertone.
"Look!"
said Ron suddenly, pointing out of the window. Hagrid had just straightened up and turned round. If he had been blushing before, it was nothing to what he was doing now. Getting to their feet very cautiously so that Hagrid wouldn't spot them, Harry, Ron, and Hermione peered through the window and saw that Madame Maxime and the Beaubaton students had just emerged from their carriage, clearly about to set off for the feast, too. They couldn't hear what Hagrid was saying, but he was talking to Madame Maxime with the rapt, misty-eyed expression Harry had only ever seen him wear once before, when he had been looking at the baby dragon, Norbert.
"He's going up to the castle with her," said Hermione indignantly. "I thought he was waiting for us."
Without so much as a backward glance at his cabin, Hagrid was trudging off up the grounds with Madame Maxime, the Beaubaton students following in their wake, jogging to keep up with their enormous strides.
"He fancies her," said Ron incredulously. "Well, if they end up having children, they'll be setting a world record. Bet any baby of theirs would weigh about a ton."
They let themselves out of the cabin and shut the door behind them. It was surprisingly dark outside. Drawing their cloaks more closely around them, they set off up the sloping lawns.
"Ooh, it's them. Look,"
Hermione whispered. The Durmstrang party was walking up toward the castle from the lake. Victor Crumb was walking side by side with Karkaroff, and the other Durmstrang students were straggling along behind them. Ron watched Crumb excitedly, but Crumb did not look around as he reached the front doors a little ahead of Hermione, Ron, and Harry, and proceeded through them. When they entered the candle-lit great hall, it was almost full. The goblet of fire had been moved. It was now standing in front of Dumbledore's empty chair at the teacher's table. Fred and George, clean-shaven again, seemed to have taken their disappointment fairly well.
"Hope it's Angelina," said Fred, as Harry, Ron, and Hermione sat down. "So do I," said Hermione breathlessly. "Well, we'll soon know."
The Halloween feast seemed to take much longer than usual, perhaps because it was their second feast in 2 days. Harry didn't seem to fancy the extravagantly prepared food as much as he would have normally. Like everyone else in the hall, judging by the constantly craning necks, the impatient expressions on every face, the fidgeting, and the standing up to see whether Dumbledore had finished eating yet, Harry simply wanted the plates to clear and to hear who had been selected as champions. At long last, the golden plates returned to their original spotless state. There was a sharp upswing in the level of noise within the hall, which died away almost instantly as Dumbledore got to his feet. On either side of him, Professor Karkaroff and Madame Maxime looked as tense and expectant as anyone. Ludo Bagman was beaming and winking at various students. Mr. Crouch, however, looked quite uninterested, almost bored.
"Well, the goblet is almost ready to make its decision," said Dumbledore. "I estimate that it requires one more minute. Now, when the champions' names are called, I would ask them please to come up to the top of the hall, walk along the staff table, and go through into the next chamber."
He indicated the door behind the staff table,
"where they will be receiving their first instructions."
He took out his wand and gave a great sweeping wave with it. At once, all the candles except those inside the carved pumpkins were extinguished, plunging them into a state of semi-darkness. The goblet of fire now shone more brightly than anything in the whole hall, the sparkling, bright, bluey whiteness of the flames almost painful on the eyes. Everyone watched, waiting. A few people kept checking their watches.
"Any second,"
Lee Jordan whispered, 2 seats away from Harry. The flames inside the goblet turned suddenly red again. Sparks began to fly from it. Next moment a tongue of flame shot into the air. A charred piece of parchment fluttered out of it. The whole room gasped. Dumbledore caught the piece of parchment and held it at arm's length so that he could read it by the light of the flames, which had turned back to blue-white.
"The champion for Durmstrang," he read in a strong, clear voice, "will be Victor Crumb."
"No surprises there," yelled Ron, as a storm of applause and cheering swept the hall. Harry saw Victor Crumb rise from the Slytherin table and slouch up toward Dumbledore. He turned right, walked along the staff table, and disappeared through the door into the next chamber.
"Bravo, Victor!"
boomed Karkaroff so loudly that everyone could hear him, even over all the applause.
"Knew you had it in you!"
The clapping and chatting died down. Now everyone's attention was focused again on the goblet, which, seconds later, turned red once more. A second piece of parchment shot out of it, propelled by the flames.
"The champion for Beauxbatons," said Dumbledore, "is Fleur Delacour." "It's her, Ron!"
Harry shouted, as the girl who so resembled a Vela got gracefully to her feet, shook back her sheet of silvery blonde hair, and swept up between the Ravenclaw and Hufflepuff tables.
"Oh, look! They're all disappointed!"
Hermione said over the noise, nodding toward the remainder of the Beaubatons' party. Disappointed was a bit of an understatement, Harry thought. Two of the girls who had not been selected had dissolved into tears and were sobbing with their heads on their arms. When Fleur Delacour, too, had vanished into the side chamber, silence fell again, but this time it was a silence so stiff with excitement you could almost taste it. The Hogwarts champion next. And the goblet of fire turned red once more. Sparks showered out of it. The tongue of flame shot high into the air, and from its tip Dumbledore pulled the third piece of parchment. "The Hogwarts champion," he called, "is Cedric Diggory."
"No,"
said Ron loudly, but nobody heard him except Harry. The uproar from the next table was too great. Every single Hufflepuff had jumped to his or her feet, screaming and stamping as Cedric made his way past them, grinning broadly, and headed off toward the chamber behind the teacher's table. Indeed, the applause for Cedric went on so long that it was some time before Dumbledore could make himself heard again.
"Excellent!"
Dumbledore called happily, as at last the tumult died down.
"Well, we now have our three champions. I am sure I can count upon all of you, including the remaining students from Beaubaton and Durmstrang, to give your champions every ounce of support you can muster. By cheering your champion on, you will contribute in a very real..."
But Dumbledore suddenly stopped speaking, and it was apparent to everybody what had distracted him. The fire in the goblet had just turned red again. Sparks were flying out of it. A long flame shot suddenly into the air, and borne upon it was another piece of parchment. Automatically, it seemed, Dumbledore reached out a long hand and seized the parchment, then held it out and stared at the name written upon it. There was a long pause, during which Dumbledore stared at the slip in his hands, and everyone in the room stared at Dumbledore. And then Dumbledore cleared his throat and read out, "Harry Potter." Chapter 17. The Four Champions. Harry sat there, aware that every head in the great hall had turned to look at him. He was stunned. He felt numb. He was surely dreaming. He had not heard correctly. There was no applause. A buzzing, as though of angry bees, was starting to fill the hall. Some students were standing up to get a better look at Harry as he sat, frozen in his seat. Up at the top table, Professor McGonagall had got to her feet and swept past Ludo Bagman and Professor Karkaroff to whisper urgently to Professor Dumbledore, who bent his ear toward her, frowning slightly. Harry turned to Ron and Hermione. Beyond them, he saw the long Gryffindor table all watching him, open-mouthed.
"I didn't put my name in," Harry said blankly. "You know I didn't."
Both of them stared just as blankly back. At the top table, Professor Dumbledore had straightened up, nodding to Professor McGonagall.
"Harry Potter!"
he called again.
"Harry! Up here, if you please."
"Go on,"
Hermione whispered, giving Harry a slight push. Harry got to his feet, trod on the hem of his robes, and stumbled slightly. He set off up the gap between Gryffindor and Hufflepuff tables. It felt like an immensely long walk. The top table didn't seem to be getting any nearer at all, and he could feel hundreds and hundreds of eyes upon him, as though each were a searchlight. The buzzing grew louder and louder. After what seemed like an hour, he was right in front of Dumbledore, feeling the stares of all the teachers upon him.
"Well, through the door, Harry," said Dumbledore.
He wasn't smiling. Harry moved off along the teacher's table. Hagrid was seated right at the end. He did not wink at Harry, or wave, or give any of his usual signs of greeting. He looked completely astonished, and stared at Harry as he passed, like everyone else. Harry went through the door out of the great hall, and found himself in a smaller room lined with paintings of witches and wizards. A handsome fire was roaring in the fireplace opposite him. The faces in the portraits turned to look at him as he entered.
He saw a wizened witch flit out of the frame of her picture and into the one next to it, which contained a wizard with a walrus moustache. The wizened witch started whispering in his ear. Victor Crumb, Cedric Diggory, and Fleur Delacour were grouped around the fire. They looked strangely impressive, silhouetted against the flames. Crumb, hunched up and brooding, was leaning against the mantelpiece, slightly apart from the other two. Cedric was standing with his hands behind his back, staring into the fire. Fleur Delacour looked around when Harry walked in and threw back her sheet of long, silvery hair.
"What is it?" she said. "Do they want us back in the hall?"
She thought he had come to deliver a message. Harry didn't know how to explain what had just happened. He just stood there, looking at the three champions. It struck him how very tall all of them were. There was a sound of scurrying feet behind him, and Ludo Bagman entered the room. He took Harry by the arm and led him forward.
"Extraordinary," he muttered, squeezing Harry's arm. "Absolutely extraordinary. Gentlemen, lady," he added, approaching the fireside and addressing the other three, "may I introduce, incredible though it may seem, the fourth Tri-Wizard Champion?"
Victor Crumb straightened up. His surly face darkened as he surveyed Harry. Cedric looked nonplussed. He looked from Bagman to Harry and back again, as though sure he must have misheard what Bagman had said. Fleur Delacour, however, tossed her hair, smiling, and said,
"Oh, very funny joke, Mr. Bagman."
"Joke?" Bagman repeated, bewildered. "No! No, not at all! Harry's name just came out of the Goblet of Fire."
Crumb's thick eyebrows contracted slightly. Cedric was still looking politely bewildered. Fleur frowned.
"But evidently there has been a mistake," she said contemptuously to Bagman. "He cannot compete. He is too young."
"Well, it is amazing," said Bagman, rubbing his smooth chin and smiling down at Harry. "But, as you know, the age restriction was only imposed this year as an extra safety measure, and as his name's come out of the goblet. I mean, I don't think there can be any ducking out at this stage. It's down in the rules. You're obliged. Harry will just have to do the best he—"
The door behind them opened again, and a large group of people came in. Professor Dumbledore, followed closely by Mr. Crouch, Professor Karkaroff, Madame Maxime, Professor McGonagall, and Professor Snape. Harry heard the buzzing of the hundreds of students on the other side of the wall before Professor McGonagall closed the door.
"Madame Maxime," said Fleur at once, striding over to her headmistress, "they are saying that this little boy is to compete also."
Somewhere under Harry's numb disbelief, he felt a ripple of anger.
"Little boy?"
Madame Maxime had drawn herself up to her full and considerable height. The top of her handsome head brushed the candle-filled chandelier, and her gigantic black satin bosom swelled.
"What is the meaning of this, Dumbledore?"
she said imperiously.
"I'd rather like to know that myself, Dumbledore," said Professor Karkaroff.
He was wearing a steely smile, and his blue eyes were like chips of ice.
"Two Hogwarts champions! I don't remember anyone telling me the host school is allowed two champions, or have I not read the rules carefully enough?"
He gave a short and nasty laugh.
"C'est impossible,"
said Madame Maxime, whose enormous hand with its many superb opals was resting upon Fleur's shoulder.
"Hogwarts cannot have two champions. It is most unjust."
"We were under the impression that your age line would keep out younger contestants, Dumbledore,"
said Karkaroff, his steely smile still in place, though his eyes were colder than ever.
"Otherwise, we would, of course, have brought along a wider selection of candidates from our own schools."
"It's no one's fault but Potter's, Karkaroff," said Snape softly. His black eyes were alight with malice. "Don't go blaming Dumbledore for Potter's determination to break rules. He has been crossing lines ever since he arrived here."
"Thank you, Severus," said Dumbledore firmly.
and Snape went quiet, though his eyes still glinted malevolently through his curtain of greasy black hair. Professor Dumbledore was now looking down at Harry, who looked right back at him, trying to discern the expression of the eyes behind the half-moon spectacles.
"Did you put your name into the Goblet of Fire, Harry?" he asked calmly.
"No," said Harry. He was very aware of everybody watching him closely. Snape made a soft noise of impatient disbelief in the shadows.
"Did you ask an older student to put it into the Goblet of Fire for you?"
said Professor Dumbledore, ignoring Snape.
"No,"
said Harry vehemently.
"Ah, but of course he is lying,"
cried Madame Maxime. Snape was now shaking his head, his lip curling.
"He could not have crossed the age line," said Professor McGonagall sharply. "I am sure we are all agreed on that."
"Dumbledore must have made a mistake with the line," said Madame Maxime, shrugging.
"It is possible, of course," said Dumbledore politely. "Dumbledore, you know perfectly well you did not make a mistake," said Professor McGonagall angrily. "Really, what nonsense! Harry could not have crossed the line himself, and as Professor Dumbledore believes that he did not persuade an older student to do it for him, I'm sure that should be good enough for everybody else."
She shot a very angry look at Professor Snape.
"Mr. Crouch! Mr. Bagman," said Karkaroff, his voice unctuous once more. "You are our, objective judges. Surely you will agree that this is most irregular."
Bagman wiped his round, boyish face with his handkerchief and looked at Mr. Crouch, who was standing outside the circle of the firelight, his face half hidden in shadow. He looked slightly eerie, the half-darkness making him look much older, giving him an almost skull-like appearance. When he spoke, however, it was in his usual curt voice.
"We must follow the rules, and the rules state clearly that those people whose names come out of the Goblet of Fire are bound to compete in the tournament."
"Well, Barty knows the rule book back to front,"
said Bagman, beaming and turning back to Karkaroff and Madame Maxime, as though the matter was now closed.
"I insist upon resubmitting the names of the rest of my students," said Karkaroff.
He had dropped his unctuous tone and his smile now. His face wore a very ugly look indeed.
"You will set up the Goblet of Fire once more, and we will continue adding names until each school has two champions. It's only fair, Dumbledore."
"But Karkaroff, it doesn't work like that," said Bagman. "The Goblet of Fire's just gone out. It won't reignite until the start of the next tournament."
"In which Durmstrang will most certainly not be competing,"
exploded Karkaroff.
"After all our meetings and negotiatings and compromises, I little expected something of this nature to occur. I have half a mind to leave now."
"Empty threat, Karkaroff," growled a voice from near the door. "You can't leave your champion now. He's got to compete. They've all got to compete. Binding magical contract, like Dumbledore said. Convenient, eh?"
Moody had just entered the room. He limped toward the fire, and with every right step he took, there was a loud clunk.
"Convenient?" said Karkaroff. "I'm afraid I don't understand you, Moody."
Harry could tell he was trying to sound disdainful, as though what Moody was saying was barely worth his notice. But his hands gave him away. They had balled themselves into fists.
"Don't you?" said Moody quietly. "It's very simple, Karkaroff. Someone put Potter's name in that goblet, knowing he'd have to compete if it came out."
"Evidently someone who wished to give Hogwarts two bites at the apple,"
said Madame Maxime.
"I quite agree, Madame Maxime," said Karkaroff, bowing to her. "I shall be lodging complaints with the Ministry of Magic and the International Confederation of Wizards."
"If anyone's got reason to complain, it's Potter," growled Moody. "But
Funny thing. I don't hear him saying a word.
Why should he complain? Burst out Fleur Delacour, stamping her foot. He has the chance to compete, hasn't he? We have all been open to be chosen for weeks and weeks. The honor for our schools. 1,000 galleons in prize money. This is a chance many would die for.
Maybe someone's hoping Potter is going to die for it, said Moody, with the merest trace of a growl. An extremely tense silence followed these words. Ludo Bagman, who was looking very anxious indeed, bounced nervously up and down on his feet and said,
"Moody, old man, what a thing to say."
"We all know Professor Moody considers the morning wasted if he hasn't discovered 6 plots to murder him before lunchtime," said Karkaroff loudly. "Apparently, he is now teaching his students to fear assassination, too. An odd quality in a defense against the Dark Arts teacher, Dumbledore, but no doubt you had your reasons."
"Imagining things, am I?" growled Moody. "Seeing things, eh? It was a skilled witch or wizard who put the boy's name in that goblet."
"Ah, what evidence is there of that?" said Madame Maxime, throwing up her huge hands.
"Because they hoodwinked a very powerful magical object," said Moody. "It would have needed an exceptionally strong confundus charm to bamboozle that goblet into forgetting that only 3 schools compete in the tournament. I'm guessing they submitted Potter's name under a 4th school to make sure he was the only one in his category."
"You seem to have given this a great deal of thought, Moody," said Karkaroff coldly. "And a very ingenious theory it is. Though, of course, I heard you recently got it into your head that one of your birthday presents contained a cunningly disguised basilisk egg, and smashed it to pieces before realizing it was a carriage clock. So you'll understand if we don't take you entirely seriously."
"There are those who turn innocent occasions to their advantage," Moody retorted in a menacing voice. "It's my job to think the way dark wizards do, Karkaroff, as you ought to remember."
"Alastor," said Dumbledore warningly. Harry wondered for a moment whom he was speaking to, but then realized Mad Eye could hardly be Moody's real first name. Moody fell silent, though still surveying Karkaroff with satisfaction. Karkaroff's face was burning.
"How this situation arose, we do not know," said Dumbledore, speaking to everyone gathered in the room. "It seems to me, however, that we have no choice but to accept it. Both Cedric and Harry have been chosen to compete in a tournament. This, therefore, they will do."
"Or but Dumbledore."
"My dear Madame Maxime, if you have an alternative, I would be delighted to hear it."
Dumbledore waited, but Madame Maxime did not speak. She merely glared. She wasn't the only one either. Snape looked furious, Karkaroff livid. Bagman, however, looked rather excited.
"Well, shall we crack on then?"
he said, rubbing his hands together and smiling around the room.
"Got to give our champions their instructions, haven't we? Barty, want to do the honours?"
Mr. Crouch seemed to come out of a deep reverie.
"Yes," he said. "Instructions, yes. The first task..."
He moved forward into the firelight. Close up, Harry thought he looked ill. There were dark shadows beneath his eyes, and a thin, papery look about his wrinkled skin that had not been there at the Quidditch World Cup.
"The first task is designed to test your daring," he told Harry, Cedric, Fleur, and Victor. "So we are not going to be telling you what it is. Courage in the face of the unknown is an important quality in a wizard. Very important. The first task will take place on November the 24th in front of the other students and the panel of judges. The champions are not permitted to ask for or accept help of any kind from their teachers to complete the tasks in the tournament. The champions will face the first challenge armed only with their wands. They will receive information about the second task when the first is over. Owing to the demanding and time-consuming nature of the tournament, the champions are exempted from end-of-year tests.
Mr. Crouch turned to look at Dumbledore.
I think that's all. Is it, Albus?
I think so, said Dumbledore, who was looking at Mr. Crouch with mild concern.
Are you sure you wouldn't like to stay at Hogwarts tonight, Barty?
No, Dumbledore. I must get back to the Ministry, said Mr. Crouch. It is a very busy, very difficult time at the moment. I've left young Weatherby in charge. Very enthusiastic. A little over-enthusiastic, if truth be told.
You come and have a drink before you go, at least, said Dumbledore.
Come on, Barty, I'm staying, said Bagman brightly. It's all happening at Hogwarts now, you know, much more exciting here than at the office.
I think not, Ludo, said Crouch with a touch of his old impatience.
Professor Karkaroff, Madame Maxime, a nightcap? Said Dumbledore.
But Madame Maxime had already put her arm around Fleur's shoulders and was leading her swiftly out of the room. Harry could hear them both talking very fast in French as they went off into the great hall. Karkaroff beckoned to Crumb, and they too exited, though in silence.
Harry, Cedric, I suggest you go up to bed, said Dumbledore, smiling at both of them. I am sure Gryffindor and Hufflepuff are waiting to celebrate with you, and it would be a shame to deprive them of this excellent excuse to make a great deal of mess and noise.
Harry glanced at Cedric, who nodded, and they left together. The great hall was deserted now. The candles had burned low, giving the jagged smiles of the pumpkins an eerie, flickering quality.
So, said Cedric with a slight smile, we're playing against each other again.
I suppose, said Harry. He really couldn't think of anything to say. The inside of his head seemed to be in complete disarray, as though his brain had been ransacked.
So, tell me, said Cedric, as they reached the entrance hall, which was now lit only by torches in the absence of the goblet of fire. How did you get your name in?
I didn't, said Harry, staring up at him. I didn't put it in. I was telling the truth.
Ah, okay, said Cedric. Harry could tell Cedric didn't believe him. Well, see you then.
Instead of going up the marble staircase, Cedric headed for a door to its right. Harry stood listening to him going down the stone steps beyond it. Then, slowly, he started to climb the marble ones. Was anyone except Ron and Hermione going to believe him, or would they all think he'd put himself in for the tournament? Yet how could anyone think that when he was facing competitors who'd had 3 years more magical education than he had, when he was now facing tasks that not only sounded very dangerous, but which were to be performed in front of hundreds of people? Yes, he'd thought about it, he'd fantasized about it, but it had been a joke, really, an idle sort of dream. He'd never really seriously considered entering. But someone else had considered it. Someone else had wanted him in the tournament and had made sure he was entered. Why? To give him a treat? He didn't think so, somehow. To see him make a fool of himself, well, they were likely to get their wish. But to get him killed? Was Moody just being his usual paranoid self? Couldn't someone have put Harry's name in the goblet as a trick, a practical joke? Did anyone really want him dead? Harry was able to answer that at once. Yes, someone wanted him dead. Someone had wanted him dead ever since he had been a year old. Lord Voldemort. But how could Voldemort have ensured that Harry's name got into the Goblet of Fire? Voldemort was supposed to be far away in some distant country, in hiding, alone, feeble and powerless. Yet, in that dream he had had, just before he had awoken with his scar hurting, Voldemort had not been alone. He had been talking to Wormtail, plotting Harry's murder. Harry got a shock to find himself facing the fat lady already. He had barely noticed where his feet were carrying him. It was also a surprise to see that she was not alone in her frame. The wizened witch who had flitted into her neighbor's painting when he had joined the champions downstairs was now sitting smugly beside the fat lady. She must have dashed through every picture lining 7 staircases to reach here before him. Both she and the fat lady were looking down at him with the keenest interest.
"Well, well, well," said the fat lady. "Vilas just told me everything. Who's just been chosen as school champion, then?"
"Balderdash," said Harry dully.
"It most certainly isn't,"
said the pale witch indignantly.
"No, no, Vi, it's the password," said the fat lady soothingly,
and she swung forward on her hinges to let Harry into the common room. The blast of noise that met Harry's ears when the portrait opened almost knocked him backward. Next thing he knew, he was being wrenched inside the common room by about a dozen pair of hands, and was facing the whole of Gryffindor House, all of whom were screaming, applauding, and whistling.
"You should have told us you'd entered,"
bellowed Fred. He looked half annoyed, half deeply impressed.
"How did you do it without getting a beard? Brilliant!" roared George.
"I didn't," Harry said. "I don't know how."
But Angelina had now swooped down upon him.
"Oh, if it couldn't be me, at least it's a Gryffindor."
"You'll be able to pay back Diggory for that last Quidditch match, Harry,"
shrieked Katie Bell, another of the Gryffindor chasers.
"We've got food, Harry. Come and have some." "I'm not hungry. I had enough at the feast."
But nobody wanted to hear that he wasn't hungry. Nobody wanted to hear that he hadn't put his name in the goblet. Not one single person seemed to have noticed that he wasn't at all in the mood to celebrate. Lee Jordan had unearthed a Gryffindor banner from somewhere, and he insisted on draping it around Harry like a cloak. Harry couldn't get away. Whenever he tried to sidle over to the staircase up to the dormitories, the crowd around him closed ranks, forcing another butterbeer on him, stuffing crisps and peanuts into his hands. Everyone wanted to know how he had done it, how he had tricked Dumbledore's age line and managed to get his name into the goblet.
"I didn't," he said, over and over again. "I don't know how it happened."
But for all the notice anyone took, he might just as well not have answered at all.
"I'm tired,"
he bellowed finally, after nearly half an hour.
"No, seriously, George, I'm going to bed."
He wanted more than anything to find Ron and Hermione, to find a bit of sanity, but neither of them seemed to be in the common room, insisting that he needed to sleep, and almost flattening the little Creevy brothers as they attempted to waylay him at the foot of the stairs. Harry managed to shake everyone off and climb up to the dormitory as fast as he could. To his great relief, he found Ron was lying on his bed in the otherwise empty dormitory, still fully dressed. He looked up when Harry slammed the door behind him.
"Where have you been?" Harry said.
"Oh, hello," said Ron. He was grinning, but it was a very odd, strange sort of grin. Harry suddenly became aware that he was still wearing the scarlet Gryffindor banner that Lee had tied around him. He hastened to take it off, but it was knotted very tightly. Ron lay on the bed without moving, watching Harry struggle to remove it.
"So,"
he said, when Harry had finally removed the banner and thrown it into a corner.
"Congratulations."
"What do you mean, congratulations?" said Harry, staring at Ron. There was definitely something wrong with the way Ron was smiling. It was more like a grimace.
"Well, no one else got across the age line," said Ron. "Not even Fred and George. What did you use? The invisibility cloak?"
"The invisibility cloak wouldn't have got me over that line," said Harry slowly.
"Oh, right," said Ron. I thought you might have told me if it was the cloak, because it would have covered both of us, wouldn't it? But you found another way, did you?
Listen, said Harry, I didn't put my name in that goblet. Someone else must have done it.
Ron raised his eyebrows.
What would they do that for?
I don't know, said Harry.
He felt it would sound very melodramatic to say, to kill me. Ron's eyebrows rose so high that they were in danger of disappearing into his hair.
It's okay, you know. You can tell me the truth, he said. If you don't want everyone else to know, fine, but I don't know why you're bothering to lie. You didn't get into trouble for it, did you? That friend of the fat lady's, that Violet, she's already told us all Dumbledore's letting you enter. 1,000 galleons prize money, eh? And you don't have to do end-of-year tests, either.
I didn't put my name in that goblet, said Harry, starting to feel angry.
Yeah, okay, said Ron, in exactly the same sceptical tone as Cedric. Only you said this morning you'd have done it last night and no one would have seen you. I'm not stupid, you know.
You're doing a really good impression of it, Harry snapped.
Yeah, said Ron,
and there was no trace of a grin, forced or otherwise, on his face now.
You want to get to bed, Harry? I expect you'll need to be up early tomorrow for a photo call or something.
He wrenched the hangings shut around his four-poster, leaving Harry standing there by the door, staring at the dark red velvet curtains, now hiding one of the few people he had been sure would believe him. Chapter 18 The Weighing of the Ones. When Harry woke up on Sunday morning, it took him a moment to remember why he felt so miserable and worried. Then the memory of the previous night rolled over him. He sat up and ripped back the curtains of his own four-poster, intending to talk to Ron, to force Ron to believe him, only to find that Ron's bed was empty. He had obviously gone down to breakfast. Harry dressed and went down the spiral staircase into the common room. The moment he appeared, the people who had already finished breakfast broke into applause again. The prospect of going down into the Great Hall and facing the rest of the Gryffindors, all treating him like some sort of hero, was not inviting. It was that, however, or stay here and allow himself to be cornered by the Creevy brothers, who were both beckoning frantically to him to join them. He walked resolutely over to the portrait hole, pushed it open, climbed out of it, and found himself face to face with Hermione.
"Hello," she said, holding up a stack of toast, which she was carrying in a napkin. "I brought you this. Want to go for a walk?"
"Good idea," said Harry gratefully. They went downstairs, crossed the entrance hall quickly, without looking in at the great hall, and were soon striding across the lawn toward the lake, where the Durmstrang ship was moored, reflected blackly in the water. It was a chilly morning, and they kept moving, munching their toast, as Harry told Hermione exactly what had happened after he had left the Gryffindor table the night before. To his immense relief, Hermione accepted his story without question.
"Well, of course I knew you hadn't entered yourself,"
she said, when he'd finished telling her about the scene in the chamber off the hall.
"The look on your face when Dumbledore read out your name. But the question is, who did put it in? Because Moody's right, Harry. I don't think any student could have done it. They'd never be able to fool the goblet or get over Dumbledore's—"
"Have you seen Ron?" Harry interrupted. Hermione hesitated.
"Yes. He was at breakfast," she said.
"Does he still think I entered myself?"
"Well, no, I don't think so. Not really," said Hermione awkwardly.
"What's that supposed to mean, not really?"
"Oh, Harry, isn't it obvious?" Hermione said despairingly. "He's jealous."
"Jealous?" Harry said incredulously.
"Jealous of what?"
"He wants to make a prat of himself in front of the whole school, does he?"
"Look," said Hermione patiently, "it's always you who gets all the attention. You know it is. I know it's not your fault,"
she added quickly, seeing Harry open his mouth furiously.
"I know you don't ask for it, but, well, you know, Ron's got all those brothers to compete against at home, and you're his best friend and you're really famous. He's always shunted to one side whenever people see you, and he puts up with it, and he never mentions it. But I suppose this is just one time too many."
"Great," said Harry bitterly. Really great. Tell him from me I'll swap any time he wants. Tell him from me he's welcome to it. People gawping at my forehead everywhere I go.
I'm not telling him anything, Hermione said shortly. Tell him yourself. It's the only way to sort this out.
I'm not running around after him, trying to make him grow up, Harry said so loudly that several owls in a nearby tree took flight in alarm. Maybe he'll believe that I'm not enjoying myself once I've got my neck broken, or...
That's not funny, said Hermione quietly. That's not funny at all.